Kia ora, welcome to Asian in Aotearoa, a podcast of uncensored conversations with Asian creatives. I'm Jenna, and in this episode, I catch up with Auckland-based producer, mix engineer, and music nerd, Eddie. Eddie has earned two nominations for Best Producer at the Pacific Music Awards and is making his mark in the NZ music scene and beyond. In this episode, we talk about music, of course, as well as Eddie's background, his relationship to leadership, collaboration, creativity, and self-love. Welcome, Eddie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Would you mind doing a brief self-intro?
Yeah, for sure. My name's Eddie. Edward. Edric. Ed.
Any of those?
Yeah, any of those. Everybody calls me something. Oh, I've had EDY. They just spell my name out. That's kind of cool. I'm a music producer. I play the piano. I'm a mix engineer. I'm a music manager. I'm a secondary school educator. And I'm just a keen-ass guy who works in the music industry, I guess. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun.
And how old are you?
I'm 26, which, you know, I feel a lot older than I am, but, you know, I'm still a kid at heart.
You certainly, looking at your bio, you've done a lot.
I try. I really do try. I try my best.
And so, you're Chinese?
I am Chinese. That's really good. I'm really what? Impressed. I don't know. I feel like you're a mix. You're a mix.
I am a mix. Yeah.
Of Chinese?
I'm Malaysian Chinese and Japanese Pakeha.
Wow.
I read an article about you.
An article?
Yep. On NZ Musician that touches on your school experience.
Mm.
How has that bullying influenced who you are and where you're at today?
Did you say bullying?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a deep dive.
I know, I'm getting right in there.
I love that, getting straight to the juice. Well, growing up, I was real self-conscious of my body. I feel like I still have like body dysmorphia in a way. Kind of keeps me on my toes and makes sure that I'm healthy. I feel like health is wealth, and I learn that more and more each year. But because I was a chubby kid, I got bullied for it. And I feel like New Zealand's a lot better than it was when I was growing up. I feel like racism was definitely way more common when, like, in the 2000s. And then I stopped kind of experiencing it after the 2010 onwards period. And then, so pretty much during high school, primary school, yeah, like, I would always kind of get mocked for being fat or like chubby, but like, you know, I look at my photos and I'm like, yeah, but I wasn't that fat, but maybe it was the combination.
That was the toxic, man.
I know, it was an experience. Mm. And I think it was the mixture of being chubby and having glasses. Mm. I actually had laser surgery, so I'm
so scared to do that.
You should do it. It takes 20 seconds. You cry for a couple hours unless you pop a sleeping pill, and then you're good. When I did my surgery, they told me to pop a sleeping pill and sleep it off, and then I'd be all good in the morning. But I played a show later that night. So I stayed awake. I sat on my bed for like 3 hours just crying because it was like, it felt like I had sand in my eyes. So I rocked up to the gig with like two goggles on and the tape to my eyes. And you know what? I played so badly that night. I'm pretty sure I played out of key for most of the gig. But I showed up. I was there for my boys.
How old were you?
This was literally maybe 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a 10-year warranty on eyesight, apparently. So I'm 3 years through that. And it's still good. Oh, yes, I got sidetracked. I do that a lot. I got bullied because I just kind of looked like this geeky Asian kid, which I was. Like, I'm so geeky, and I own that now because I'm interested in everything music. But yeah, got bullied for it, and then I decided to go to the gym when I was like year 10. And then, yeah, as soon as I kind of lost weight, as soon as I started wearing contact lenses, like, all the bullying stopped. Which is crazy, right? Which really shows how much people judge by face value.
Totally. You went through a rom-com makeover, basically.
Yeah, and I guess it made me want to work even harder to prove a point that I could do what I wanted to do, because everybody kind of... Yeah, it was a mixture of being chubby, Asian, having glasses, and then trying to make, like, R&B hip-hop.
Mm.
It just, you know, everybody was expecting some Mozart, Beethoven, and I was like, nah. I discovered Eminem, Curtain Call, Fergie, Rihanna, I think Justin Bieber just came out. Yeah, it was a good time to be alive, but I had to really push onwards and just kind of prove everybody wrong.
Would you describe yourself as successful?
You know what? I want to say yes. And not for the reason that most people think. I think that I'm successful because I'm tight with my family. I have a circle of really, really real true friends that have my back. And I know that, you know, we all have our lives going on. We go in and out of our relationships with different people and hang out more, hang out less. But at the end of the day, when it counts, we have each other's backs. And I'm really, really grateful for it because I feel like it's not something that everybody has. And so when people usually say success, they think about career. But like, I just think of it as like, I have some really cool friends. I'm tight with my family and I'm doing what I want to do every day. And that makes me feel successful.
Great answer. Have you always been close with your family?
That's a really you're good with all these questions, you know. I love these questions. I feel like I'm tight with my family. I feel like my family has always given the world to me, or whatever they could. My parents were like immigrants, so I'm like kind of first gen. Yeah, I moved here when I was 2. We kind of started from the bottom. Like, I remember like it'd be like 1-bedroom apartment, and then to like our first house. And then, yeah, my parents really built over the years, like a lot of immigrants do, through a lot of hard work. And it obviously came at a cost, because my parents were studying and working pretty much my whole childhood, and I was raised by my nan. But I feel like growing up, they put me into music classes, which is, I feel like it is an Asian thing, but
I did piano too as
a child. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like you learn your 9 times tables before you even start school. They had like posters.
I wasn't really that hardcore.
Oh, yeah, like, man.
I'm very bad at maths.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, they put me in accelerate maths and I failed. Wow. Because I was like, why did you do that to me? Like... Yeah, but I feel like, yeah, again, my family has always had my back, but to an extent, I feel like they never really understood what I wanted to do or what I do, in the sense that, like, I guess producing, or like the field of work that I'm in, is very niche. Mm. It's like when you say I mix, what do you mix, like pancakes?
Yeah.
Like, do you mix like cement? Like, you know, there's so many different, like, what's mixing even?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tried to explain a lot, or my mom would definitely like really try, and I really appreciate it. But to some extent, they're still kind of like no idea. They know that I deal with a lot of songwriters, singers, artists, rappers. I make beats, compose, but that's kind of the extent that they understand. And they, yeah, you know, all parents have that doubt when like their kid's like, I'm going to do music for a career. They wanted me to just have a job, but in the sense that they wanted me to be able to support myself and survive, not really like they didn't have any. And I had a chat with my dad like a few years back, and I asked him, I was like, have you ever like had expectations of what you wanted me to be? He's like, no, I just want you to be happy and I want you to be able to support yourself. So I get it. And, you know, like it took quite a few years for them to see money coming in from music and being like, he might actually be able to do it. This kid might actually be able to do it. And so I was like, yeah, hell yeah. You know, so I just kind of committed. Like, you phase in and out of it when you get kind of like drained from creativity. But yeah, it's always been my dream. And I think, you know, 5-year-old Eddie would be proud.
What makes a hit a hit?
A hit makes a hit when it makes someone feel something, right? And I say this because I believe that every chord progression, every song lyric has already been used. That's why you have mumble rappers. And like, I get why people are like, oh, that's not real music. But like, I feel like music is something that should make you feel something. Yeah, I know a lot of singers and rappers that just sing and rap for fun. And that's what music is supposed to be about. It's not really always supposed to be deep and meaningful. Sometimes it could just be something that you want to get really drunk to. And then never listen to the song ever again, you know?
Yeah.
And some songs do that for you. That's why you have, you know, songs for different seasons, you know? Yeah. And I feel like good music or a hit is something that makes people want to do something. Like, for example, songs that blow up on TikTok. Why do people do TikToks to it? Because it makes them want to do like a dance. It makes them want to do, you know, a content clip. And that's what I feel like makes a hit these days.
Yeah. When I first heard Usha Island's new single, my first thought was, who the hell produced this?
Oh, really? Thank you so much.
Really loved it. And then I found out it was you.
Ooh. Hey, it's me.
What was working on that project like?
It was really interesting because prior to producing the Danny and T, I love them so much. Prior to producing for them, I had mixed a couple records. And to be honest, I was a little bit nervous going into producing for them because they're very particular about what they want. And with mixing, it's good because mixing is I treat it almost like science mixed with a little bit of intuition. So my gut plus my mind equals a mix. And I'm kind of just putting the pieces of the puzzle together, but the puzzle pieces are already there. But going into production, I was really adamant on, guys, you need to trust me. You got to trust that I have like your best interests in mind, and you got to trust that I wouldn't make a decision based on how I feel, but I would make it, every decision is based on what's good for the song. And there are many times during that process where I'd be like, I like this and I know you like that, but I feel like this is what's best for the song. And they would trust me. And I feel like that's why that whole project turned out really, really cool. I really enjoyed the process because they trusted me. And I feel like that's such an important thing between artist and producer. Because as soon as you start going, no, 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 I don't like that snare sound. Nope, nope, not that synth. While I'm literally like just like playing some random things, you know? Yeah, as soon as that kind of, I don't want to say negativity, but just pickiness comes in, it can really quickly just burst that creative bubble. And then I'll just be like, I'll be like a statue after that.
So it sounds like you've got experience of that situation.
For sure, for sure. I've had many, many experiences of those situations of names which I won't name. But but yeah, I don't know. It's like creativity is an idea that is in your head, right? And often ideas in your head, you need to translate it into what is physically, you know, goes into an instrument or into a sound. And that often takes time. And I think some people, it's usually artists who are in development or artists who also produce. I think those are the two common ones. Because if they produce, they already know what they're used to and what they want to hear. But it's like, if you want another producer on board, you don't want that song to sound like your own production, because that defeats the point. So then there have been many times where I'm kind of like the puppet, and they're the puppeteer, and they're like, play this like this and play that chord exactly like that. And then it turns out feeling like, why don't you produce it then? You know? Yeah. And it's like, I know it sounds kind of salty, but it's like, we're here to collaborate. We're here to work together. And I'm not here to kind of be like, this has to be my idea and it has to be like this. But I just, most of the time I ask that, please let me get this idea down first. And if you want to try something, we can try that too. And then after we try both of those ideas, you can decide which one you like more. And often it's like the artist will suggest something and then later on they'll realize that it didn't work.
You were right.
And then at that stage, we had already spent 3 hours fleshing out their idea because they didn't like my idea. But then after 3 hours, I'll put my idea in and they'll be like, oh, that's way better. And then I'm like, oh.
the patience you need. Yes, so you need to be allowed some space, be trusted.
Definitely, it like. Should be a safe space for sure. I feel like creativity is such a vulnerable thing and everybody's putting themselves on the line. You know, I'm sticking my neck out on the chopping block every day and I do that without hesitation. So yeah, sometimes I get panic, I get stressed when things don't work out right off the bat. But like I'm very flexible and I'm very like open-minded, and I feel like that's something that is really important with the job, with anything. It's like you have to be willing to try things. And I've said this in another interview, it's just you have to be willing to just give up your idea and start a new one, even if you spend 3 hours on it.
What do people come to you for?
Everything, I guess, in a way. It's like I co-write a lot of lyrics as well. I've been starting to do more of that too. But usually it's like they come with me with an idea or a concept, or they come to me with a goal, and then I kind of suggest how we can achieve that. Kind of executive producing, like guiding the boat in the right direction so it reaches its destination. I feel like that's what I do a lot of. What else? People ask me how to do music full time, but it's just not a linear answer, because it's just a culmination of many and many experiences, successes and failures, and you have to go through that process to figure out if it works for you. And it may not, and it might not still for me. Like, I don't know that, and that's, I feel like, the beauty of the journey is not knowing. Because, you know, when you have a goal and you hit the target and you're like, I hit the target, what do I do now? I've experienced that time and time and again. I remember when I was 16, I was like, all I want in life is to have one song play on the radio. And then it played, I'm like,
that one.
It played.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, it's like, now it means less and less, which doesn't mean that I don't appreciate it, but it's like, I'm not too focused on the result anymore. I'm more focused on, man, I can't change or do anything about tomorrow, so all I'm going to focus on is what I can do today and have that mindset every single day.
How would you describe your leadership?
I think the compliment that I love most is when people say nice things about my energy. I feel like that plays a big part in my leadership. I want every experience associated with me to be tied in with a pleasant feeling. I want everybody around me to feel like they're safe, that they're supported, that they're heard. Yeah, because I know a lot of artists who feel like they aren't heard in the industry or whatever. Even just outside of music, I want people to feel like they can just say whatever and it'll be fine. And that's important to me, because if they feel like they can say anything, then we can create anything. We can make anything, we can write anything. Yeah, and then it just becomes a great chill vibe.
You do have a very nice vibe about you.
Thank you so much.
When's your birthday?
I'm a Taurus, April 20th.
Are you?
I'm passionate. I like being grounded,
which
is interesting because I've been floating all year around Australia and LA, which is, different. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a Taurus.
Tell me about your Australia-LA adventures.
Okay. What did I do first? I think I went to LA first.
On your own?
No, with my good friend Sam V, who I've been working with for over a decade. Me and him are like Bonnie and Clyde, but not Bonnie and Clyde. You know, we're not in... it's complicated. Love the guy. Nah, we're in a really, really interesting relationship just as like friends, as professionals. We have like this gentleman split type thing where it's like whatever we do, we just go halves. It's real cool. We do a lot for each other, and most of the time money's not really in the topic, because I know that if I have his back for a mix, he'll have my back if I need him as a mentor for something. And we've just been trading favors for like the past decade, and it's honestly a blessing. I went with Sam V. I went with Hales, which Jerry, my artist, one of the artists that I manage. He did really well there. And I went with Christian Chandrawanata, who I also live with, who engineered at Parachute full-time as head engineer for 2 years. And now he's freelancing. So just a bunch of musos from New Zealand exploring the big city of LA. The trip was really, really cool because we just... things happen so spontaneously. Like one of my good friends, Casey, we met. He actually mixed Jess B's EP or album, EP, I think, her recent one. And we met him because we went to a Jamaican restaurant one night because it was opposite across the road from the studio we were working at. And the artist that I was working with that day has the same manager as Just B. And then, yeah, we were in the Jamaican restaurant and our Caribbean restaurant. And the chef was like, oh, you guys look like dancers. You guys dancers? We're like, close, we're musicians. He's like, you guys are musicians, you got to meet this guy, he's a musician. And he Casey was sitting with the guy who wrote Climax by Usher. So it was just so random. It was I know, it's like the world provides when the time is right, and it rhymes, so it must be true. But literally we were just talking, we're like, oh, you know, we do music. And he's like, oh, you guys from New Zealand? I just mixed a project for someone from New Zealand, Just B. And we're like, no way. Her manager's Just B's manager. So we just really quickly became tight, and then we started jamming. And then he just recently produced majority of Ciara's EP and the lead single with Chris Brown. So he really quickly popped off after we met, and we kind of were along the ride of that journey with him.
Wow.
And so when I went back to LA a couple weeks ago, we pretty much just had sessions every single day, me and Casey. Working with different artists. I was just set up at the back of the room with some keys on my lap. Then we just made beats all day and recorded artists and wrote together every day for like 2 weeks. So that was LA. Yeah, the first trip I was kind of going through a little bit of a nitty-gritty relationship. So I actually had to end that relationship. I had to end my trip early to go home and sort it out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was real bad. I was quite stressed. And because of that, I knew I had to come back.
Yeah.
And now that I've gone back, I want to keep going back because you can smell the opportunity. You know, it really is the land of opportunity because you meet people at random. And people meet you and they look at you and they just hand you their phone. And you're like, why am I holding his phone? And then Instagram's loaded with like, what's your tag? You know, like, yeah. So everybody's always trying to meet everybody in LA. And I think that, yeah, people from different parts of the world go to LA to connect and to work. And if you're good and if the time is right, then the world will provide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I love that.
Yeah. Sydney was really, really cool. And I gained like this really, really strong respect for songwriters in Sydney. Blew my mind just how high the caliber of writers are in Australia. I feel like New Zealand has producers on lock for sure. I feel like our producers are like world class. All of my friends who produce are like top tier. And I say that after hearing all the producers and hearing a lot of music coming from different countries, you know, New Zealand's got it for sure.
Are there many Asian ones here?
There's Christian, the guy I went to LA with. His song, he actually worked on Blue Eyed Maori, which is, I think, number one or was number one on the charts in New Zealand. So he's probably the other heavy hitter in the Asians, the Pan-Asian circle.
Yeah.
There's a few other producers that are also really cool. But there's definitely a lack of, I know that in Canada, there's a lot of Asian producers, like real cool ones, and Asian artists, Filipino, Viet. Yeah, really, really cool. But I feel like we need more in New Zealand for sure.
What are some things you've learned from the incredible producers and engineers you've worked with?
I've learned that music is very subjective because there are some really, really talented and great engineers, and they all have different ways of doing things and different preferences. And I'm learning that it's okay to be different and to have my mixes sound different. Or, you know, I feel like as creatives in New Zealand, we need to support each other. So I never see it as a competition. I always, when I work, or usually we just hang out and we geek out about music and we talk about microphones and headphones and compressors and gear and plugins, you know. But it's just really cool to learn everybody's like process, because we kind of just feed off each other. And I feel like that would beat any tertiary, you know, institute, because when you're learning off your peers and your peers are doing well, they're obviously doing well for a reason. And so learning their kind of little tricks and shortcuts is really helpful.
You know, microphones, headphones, compressors, did you learn that sort of stuff at school?
Like, definitely. Okay. They teach you, I want to say they teach you the basics, and then the rest is up to you to ask questions. And I was that guy who had a question every 5 minutes for my lecturer Jason at Auckland Uni. He always seemed really excited to answer my questions too, because he'd kind of be talking about like the 101, if you will, of like music production, just like the basic stuff. And then I'd ask him a question about like compression or something, and he'd be like, oh, and then his eyes would light up, and then he would like talk about it for a while. And I'd really like appreciate it back in those days, because they definitely built the foundation for my understanding today.
I have written down here, level one, NCEA, music technology, teaching students how to evolve with the industry.
Yeah, that's
right. Tell me more.
So I taught at Avondale College for three years, but one of those years I was a student teacher. My placement was at Avondale. Because of COVID, well, usually you'd have two placements, but because of COVID, I only had one. And then they threw us into the world after that. They were like, all right, you guys have had one school, you got this.
Yeah. Get out there.
Yeah, I was nervous as, but you kind of just have to say, fuck it. And you just go in. You're like, hey guys, all right, this is what we're going to do today. First, we're going to start with this. And then after that, I'm going to split you in groups. Don't go yet. When I say go, then you can go. All right, here's what we're going to do. And then, you know, just kind of really have a structured way of conducting students and showing them what the expectations are. But my whole thing with teaching was, I feel like music education isn't evolving with the industry at the moment. And even as a teacher, and this is partly also why I left, as a teacher, there's limited moves you can make to make a big difference. It's kind of up to the ministry. But yeah, what I can do is spread heaps and heaps of awareness, heaps of it. And so what I've done is started a non-profit fund of initiative of taking students to studios from low decile schools. So kids who would never otherwise have the opportunity to go to a studio, like a real like Roundhead, Parachute, like, yeah, those studios have hosted a lot of very well-known names, household names. Yeah, it was really important for me to kind of take them in and pair them with mentors who are award-winning and making hits in New Zealand and overseas, whatever, and show them what the process is like making a song from scratch. So that was kind of what I wanted to do in school. But as you know, it's very, you have to tick the boxes to fit the exam or the assessment.
Yeah.
But then it feels like you're just ticking boxes for the sake of ticking boxes. Yeah, so that's one thing I found challenging. But I loved every bit of it, because I could see in the students' eyes when they learned something new and they could see the worth in it, their eyes would light up, and that I reckon that's priceless. And that makes me want to teach for life. But unfortunately, there's just not enough time in the day for me to do everything I want.
I was going to ask you, when do you do that?
Yeah, so while I was teaching, I didn't really sleep, because I'd wake up at, what, let's say 7, get to school around 8, finish school at like 4, drive to Parachute, which I leased a studio, maybe 3 or 4 weeknights a week, and then the rest of my sessions I'll do at home, and that would go till from like, what, let's say 5 p.m. till whenever the song's done, I like to say. So that could be 9, that could be 1 a.m, that could be 3 a.m, and then get home maybe around 2 or 3, prepare for the next day, think about which students I need to focus on, you know, the behavioral issues, which students have been really good, which students I need to kind of chase up for things. So plan out my next day at school and then sleep for maybe 3 hours and do it all over again every single day. And then pretty much just try to sleep as much as possible during the weekends.
How long did you do that for?
2 years.
Holy shit.
I feel like I aged 5 years.
Fuck yeah, that would do it to you.
Yeah, and I knew after the second year, and my colleagues knew, they could see it on my face. Like, I would start the term with one coffee in the morning, and I'd be sweet. Halfway through the term, I'm on 3 coffees. By the end of the term, I'm doing like 3 coffees and a big Red Bull, and maybe like a 4th one, you know, like it was just a lot of caffeine, and I loved it, but it just wasn't sustainable. And my boss would say like, oh, it doesn't sound sustainable. I'm like, yeah, it isn't.
Yeah.
And so I had to make that decision and be like, look, I don't think I can do this. So what I can do is still try to do these studio trips, which I have been doing, which is really, really cool.
So that you're still doing that?
I'm still doing that.
And awesome.
This year, I actually got to do that twice. So the second trip is about to happen in 2 weeks. And three schools involved instead of one last
year. Wow.
So it's all kind of coming into fruition slowly. And it wouldn't be possible without all of my amazing peers and colleagues and fellow producer friends, songwriters, artists who are keen to jump on board as mentors. And there's like Koha, but it's like, it's obviously underpaid. Like it's, you know, it's like for the passion of spreading this love with the kids.
Yeah. What an amazing initiative. How else would they get that opportunity?
Yeah. And I feel like enough of that will allow the government or like the ministry to know how valuable it really is, because out of those workshops, the kids would be so keen to like work on music after that. And they're just, their interest in achievement in music, crazy, you know? Yeah. Like the numbers in at Avondale of kids taking music have, I want to say they've tripled in the senior years. We've never had so many year 13s as well. Next year, I think there's going to be 2 year 13 classes. Yeah, which I was considering taking, but I'm just not going to be in New Zealand enough and I don't want to let down the kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What makes a great teacher?
It's like, it's the same as what I said before in terms of like, you want the students to feel heard. It's kind of like a music session. You want them to feel comfortable. You want them to feel safe. You want them to feel your passion. I feel like my energy is really important. So no matter how tired I am, I'll put on that energy. Sometimes it actually comes out sounding kind of sarcastic. Like I've had a year 9 kid be like, "Sir, that sounds sarcastic." I'm like, "Nah, never."
I'm just trying to keep the energy up.
Yeah. So guys, let's do this. But yeah, I feel like it's making the kids feel that passion, making them feel heard in terms of what they want to do, but then also having boundaries. It's like, how do you be the bro without being the bro? Like, I obviously want them to like me, but what's more important than them liking me is having that respect and knowing that I'm there to help them grow. I think too many people are focused on getting students to like them, that they forget that there needs to be boundaries and they need to fall in line. But I feel like because I'm so chill, if I just really quickly flip my mood and I was really serious, it would really get their attention. Rather than, you know, I could be chill as everybody's having a great time and then, you know, maybe some people are acting up and then immediately I'm like snapping into, you know, I'm like, "No, that's not okay. You can wait outside and we're going to talk about this." And then it's like, it goes from 0 to 100, and I don't do it often at all. But when I do it, like, they get it. There's no need for me to be serious all the time because music's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
It's not like English.
Oh my God. You must be the coolest music teacher ever.
I try.
If you had to do a 5-minute TED talk about something, what would it be about?
That's a really, really good question. I would talk about the importance of having a balanced life. I feel like this generation, like specifically my generation and the one later than me, so like kids born in the 2000s, is very career focused.
Really?
I do feel like that, or like influencer focused, the age of influencers, everybody's famous, everybody's got clout. I feel like everybody's focused so much on the grind, and don't get me wrong, the grind is important and I know it too well, but I've learned again and again that not having a balance is detrimental because, you know, what's going to happen after the grind? Have people thought about that? You know, you've grinded your ass off for like your whole life. Now what? You're going to just eat alone? You know, like
your body is disintegrating. Right?
You know, like you've neglected your family, you've neglected your friends, you've decided to stay single so that you can travel, do all these things, and you're loving life and you're grinding and you've achieved, you have everything. I've really kind of made that awareness recently, or just in the past 2 years or 3 years, and I feel like having a sense of family and being grounded and having a really good balance in life is like top priority, you know? And that's my TED talk.
Okay, thank you. When are you most creative?
At night. Or when I'm in the toilet, or when I'm driving. Actually, though, like literally sometimes I'm like, "All right, I need a pee." And then I'll come back and be like, "Guys, I have this crazy idea. and then it'll turn out to be a really cool song. Or I'll be driving and I'll hear a song on Spotify and I'll just start humming along. I'll be ignoring the lyrics and the voice that is in the song on Spotify in the car, and I'll start kind of, I'll just have ideas to certain beats, and then I'll be like, oh my god, that's a cool idea, and then I'd like rush home and just put it down, or I'll have it on voice memo and then I'll work on it. And then like maybe I'll be driving to the gym, so then as I get to the gym, I'm like, I'm sending voice messages to my friends who play guitar or like produce as well. I'll be like, hey, I have this crazy idea, can you try this and this, and I'll like hum out like the chords and like the rhythm, and I'll be like, can you just try this, and then and then it'll just sound great. Like, I don't know, those are creative moments. Driving, toilet, and just really, really late night. Like, I'm so tired, and then I just happen to have an idea, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm not sleeping tonight. Yeah, in LA, I was fortunate enough to spend a day in, I think his name's Tyler, One Republic's bassist's holiday mansion. I say that because I think he has 5 mansions and a holiday mansion. And his holiday mansion is the biggest building I've ever been in my life. It's like a castle. It has 4 studios in each corner. It has like a huge like swimming pool that outlooks the whole city. It has like a little turf that you can play cricket on. A few living rooms. It's like a castle. And we were there. Oh, man, why was I talking about this?
There's a reason. Keep going. That's good.
Yeah.
Creativity. Are you just going to keep going?
Oh, that's right. I remember now. So Simon Oscroft, who was, I think, guitarist at Midnight Youth back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
He manages that studio.
Wow.
Not a studio, but like a mansion. He manages that house.
Holy
and
shit.
I think he said that like the expenses just to run like electricity and water and stuff and power like for the house is like 100K, 150K a year, US. And he says that the house leaks like shit in winter because the houses in LA aren't built for rain, because it never rains in LA. That's so true. But he said, the reason I talked about this is because Simon told me that he would have like barbecues, he'd play cricket, they'd be in the pools and they'd be hanging out with his friends and stuff. And then at the end of the night, if they feel like doing music, they'll have a jam. And I love that because it's like, we might as well. There's 4 studios in the house. Why not? It's like they've done everything else and now they're in this vibe where it's like there's no pressure because fuck it, like, you know,
yeah.
we've had fun, let's have some more fun vibes, yeah. Rather than guys, we need to sit down and make the next hit,
yeah.
Like, how terrifying is that? I would be too scared to play even a single chord. I'd be like, what does a hit chord sound like?
Okay, so we've established you have been or kind of are a grinder.
Yes, but I haven't been on Grindr. Not that way.
Okay.
No, I don't do things like that. Yeah, I don't. Not me.
What does rest look like for you?
Rest is, you know what? That's funny. Last night, I just zoned out. I sat at my desk and I just zoned out for 2 hours.
Looking at what?
Nothing. Literally nothing. I was just like sitting there. I was on my phone, but not like doing anything. I kind of zoned out. This is like 1 a.m. in the morning, and at 3, I'm like, what am I doing? But it was kind of relaxing because I wasn't doing anything, and I was just by myself. And I feel like nowadays I spend less and less time by myself, because I definitely feel like when I was younger, I was like maybe 70% introverted and 30% extroverted, whereas now I forced myself to be extroverted because that's what's required of me in the industry. You have to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
So now I'd say I'm like 70% extroverted and 30% introverted, but I guess I missed that time alone without knowing it. So I do that, and I like going for really long reflective walks. Yeah, like I went for a walk last night with my friend, Christian, who I live with, and Hales, my artist. And we were just talking about politics and religion the whole time, because I just had so many like things that I wasn't familiar with, you know, a lot of political stuff that I won't talk about, but you know, that I was just really interested and curious. And we were just talking about that for like 2 hours while we were walking around the whole city. And we just walked for like 2-3 hours.
Did you feel rejuvenated after that?
Yeah, for sure. It was like a bunch of hours that I didn't think about music. And it's cool because then it feels like you have a break from it, and when you come back, you feel even more refreshed and ready to go.
What makes a great collaboration?
A great collaboration is when two people are both open-minded and have no expectations. Speaking of, I just finished a week working with, I think I'm allowed to talk about it now, the Spark TikTok duet competition. I was working with this girl called Niamh, spelt N-I-A-M-H.
Oh, yeah.
She'd only just turned 18, and the sessions with her over the past 2 weeks have easily been some of my favorites.
Really?
And the reason for that is because she just was open-minded about anything. I had no expectations. Neither of us knew what was going to come out of it. And it just turned out so good, you know, and she was so quick with ideas and she was so easy to bounce ideas off. You know, I'd hum a melody and then she'd be like, oh, sweet, I got words. I'm like, what? You know, like, yeah. It's just crazy. And we did that, like, I think we only had to make one song, but we ended up making four because four is better than one.
And so how did you get involved with the Spark thing?
Savina reached out.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like stoked. I was like, yes, please. I love doing mentoring. I love just working anything to do with music. And I love Big Fan. I love the spot. You know, it's so
shout
vibey.
Out to Savina, Big Fan.
Shout out, indeed. Mm. Yeah. So that's how it kind of all came to be.
Cool. What's been taking up your headspace recently?
A girl.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I am such a hopeless romantic.
Are you?
I am. No matter how many times I go through shit, I don't learn. Because I believe that if you are to pursue someone, you have to put your heart on the line. You can't go in half-assed because that's not fair on the other person. No matter how much trauma or how many like negative experiences you've had with other people, I always just, I'm like, well, like, if I like this person, I'm going to get hurt anyways if it doesn't work. So I might as well just go all in.
Yes.
But in saying that, I'm learning to take a little bit more time because I'm known for...
Are you going in and you're going hard? Fast. Okay, that's... I didn't think about how that would sound, but you know what I mean.
Nah, just slow and sensual. Nah. I go in guns blazing because that's how I do in music, and I trust I blame my gut. My gut helps me make songs, but it makes terrible judgments sometimes when it comes to girls. Yeah, so.
So what's happening?
Good things only, and you know, I'm excited, but I met her in LA.
Uh-huh.
And so. Yeah, it's cool to, because she's really wholesome, but it's scary because it's long distance.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, the possibilities are infinite and I'm just taking it. I like to say, like what I always say, I'm like, I can't control what happens tomorrow. All I can focus is on being happy today,
yeah,
every day, you know, wake up every day and figure out how to be happy and then, you know, let the world play its way. So if it's right, it'll work.
Yeah.
I did a tarot card reading.
With who?
In LA.
Oh, did you?
Like a professional reader. And she...
What happened?
It was crazy.
Tell me.
So I was really skeptical. And this was our last day in LA. We're just waiting for the plane to go to the airport. One of our friends wanted to go into a crystal shop.
Yeah. Love. Yeah.
She had a ring that apparently sucked out negative energy.
Uh-huh. Hey. I used to have a professional tarot side gig thing, okay?
I believe that wholeheartedly.
Give me that. What happened? You saw this trick with the ring.
That crystal place, that shop, had a roster of different clairvoyances that did readings, and they rotated every day would be a different clairvoyant. And that day it was this lady called Athena. And I was just reading their bios and like, this is and I was like, there's no way I'm doing this unless your reading is crazy, like, to my friend. And she was like, okay, I'll do it first. It was like $50 for 15 minutes.
Wow. Yep.
And so she came out like hella, like, you know, enlightened. I won't really go into it's quite personal, so yeah, I won't go into it, but her experience with the tarot card reader was so insane that it made me from like a, nah, this is bullshit, to like, okay, I'm in. So, yeah. and like a lot of people like, oh yeah, but they could search you up. But literally, I signed up and I walked into the room. So, and I gave them my first name, nothing else. I was wearing nothing that could even make them predict what I did for a living. I covered my, like, I was wearing long sleeves so they couldn't even see my tattoos. Because, like, some people might be like, oh, you're creative because you have tattoos. But I had, like, long sleeves on so that she couldn't see anything but my face. She looks me in the eye and she said, you're a musician that works with technology.
Fuck!
And you've been seeing a new girl this week. And it was true.
Wow!
And and she said, the reason I'm telling you this is because she said, this girl, she's good for you. She's going to keep you grounded. She's going to have your back. You haven't known her for a long time, but it feels like you guys have been friends for a long time. And I was like,
shit.
Yeah, so I'm like,
was she doing cards or was she literally just talking
to you? No, she was shuffling cards. She's like, tell me when to stop shuffling and then say a number. And those were my cards.
Yeah,
but it was insane. Yeah, it was really, really cool. Yeah, she also said that I was a leader, and she said that my voice is my superpower in the sense that, like, I can motivate people, you know, which is true.
For sure.
Yeah, she said a lot of really cool things. I had been doing this Dolby Atmos masterclass for mixing, which is pretty much, like, 360-degree sound, like, mixing audio so that, like, the music wraps around you. It's kind of like movie music, like, but music specifically, not for movies, just for listening. And I feel like it's going to be really big in a few years. She reckons it's going to be massive in 3 years because of me. And I'm like,
oh my God. Is it those things you see on TikTok where it's like, put your things on, it's like 8D or whatever? Is that what it is?
Something like that. But more like, you know, like the rooms that we were learning in had like 16 speakers surrounding you.
Shit.
And they had fabric covering the speakers, so you couldn't see the speakers, you're just hearing the sound coming out.
Cool.
And the thing is, there's a technical term in Dolby mixing called binaural. So binaural just means like surrounding. And I shit you not, she looked at me and she said, what you're going to work on in the next few years is going to change the way people listen to music. It's going to be binaural. And she does this with her hands. And
wow. Mind
yeah, so it was just low. It was just crazy. Cool. It was crazy because it makes me think that people are more connected to each other than you think, and some people are just able to tap into it, you know? Yeah, crazy. But yeah, she said that the girl was good for me, so I believe it too.
Okay. Hey, I love that story.
Thanks.
What do you know now that you wish your 15-year-old self knew?
It's the journey, not the destination. Take your time with girls. Those two things, literally.
Okay.
Literally. Yeah.
Self-love is a topic of the season.
Yes. It's so important.
I was going to ask, where do you sit with this?
Define self-love.
No, you define self-love.
Oh, okay. Me. Self-love is... Oh, there's so many different ways. Self-love is looking after your health. Like your physical well-being, because health is wealth, your mental well-being, protecting your, sounds corny, but protecting your energy at all costs, because it's like when people say, or like when people are about to make a fuss in public, or like, you know, you could make a fuss back, or like, you know, if someone's being racist, you could bite back, or if someone cuts you off in traffic, you could bite back. But like the only person that's gonna be upset out of that is me. They're probably laughing about it, you know? So why would I give them the power? So I feel like it's important to protect your mental well-being. So I just avoid conflict, especially with people that I don't know or care, that I'll probably never see again. But that becomes my downfall, because with friends that I do care about, I care. Like, I lose sleep if I think that things aren't all good with my boys. And they know that. I overthink hard out. So that's something I'm working on. Self-love, yeah, physical self-love, mental self-love, and then I think the biggest one is waking up and doing what you want to do every day. That's the biggest self-love that you can afford to yourself, because you are in control of your life. Obviously, it's not as easy if you can't survive. So I feel like survival aside, if you are able to survive somehow and be happy, that's worth everything. I can't understand how some people will get a job that you know, maybe it pays well, but they hate it and they complain about it every day and they do nothing about it to change it. And they just stay in that job and they keep working and they spend the money to de-stress the job that created the stress on the weekends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they'll maybe work and spend that money on shopping or like, you know, retail therapy, drinking, food with friends, going out, traveling, to de-stress what the job created just to go back to the job and create more stress for themselves. So I feel like self-love is just looking after yourself, making sure you are happy every day with what you do so you don't feel like you need to de-stress, but just, you know, you can go and do something else rather than I'm going to de-stress. I'm like, I'm going to go on a retreat because I want to, you know?
Totally. I know. It's kind of like there's no, like the whole work-life balance thing. It's like, well, actually, you've got your life.
Mm.
What are you going to fill it with?
Yeah, exactly. And work is part of life. It's not separate from life.
Mm.
I know that there's this show called Severance on Apple TV.
Yes. Oh, have you seen it?
I've seen bits of it.
It's so good.
You know, and it's like you get home from work and then you're a different person and you can just turn yourself off every time you're at work so that you don't experience it.
That show is fucking crazy awesome.
Maybe I should finish it.
It's so good. Honestly.
It takes a while to kick in though, eh?
Yeah. But then when you get to the season finale, crazy. Oh shit, I need that show to come back.
All right. I need to watch it
properly. Yeah, you should.
All right.
That was a really good answer for that, self-love. Yeah, I put it in, even though I kind of, it sounds corny and a bit cringe, but I put it in because, you know, I've had over 40 people come on the podcast now. And it's like one of the things that I've noticed is that, yeah, people can be like, well, a theme is like being really hard on ourselves or being a people pleaser or something like that. And so I put it in because I'm usually wondering what would happen when this person had more compassion for themselves? Like, what sort of decisions would they be making? What would they be saying yes or no to? You know, which...
My lecturer gave me some... Shout out to Godfrey, my lecturer from Auckland Uni. He's, like, had my back from day dot. Like, he's always been interested in everything I've done. I think he has a poster of me outside his office. Like,
cute!
Love that guy. Incredible musician. But he gave me some pieces of advice because I caught up with him a few weeks back before I went to LA and I told him, look, I'm getting really burnt out, but I love it. I don't love being burnt out, but I love what I do, even though it burns me out. And I'm so passionate about so many things and I want to do everything, but I can't. And it's not sustainable. And he said, passionate is a huge word. You need to figure out what you want to do, what you need to do, you know. And he said that him and his wife use three things to determine whether they do a job or not. The first one is it going to bring money? The second one is, do you love it? And the third one is it going to help your career? And he said that it has to tick two boxes for you to say yes. Obviously, survival aside, like if you need money to like pay rent, like all of that goes down the trash. Yeah. Like you need to be able to survive first and then afford the luxury of, you know, this is what I want to take on top of that.
Yeah, I think someone else I know is like, does it bring me money, peace, or pleasure? Something like that. How spiritual would you say you are?
I am very spiritual because I'm not religious, man. I better not get cancelled from this, but I'm gonna say this and I'm not afraid. I feel like it would be naive for us to think that we are that all that exists. I feel like it would be naive for us to feel like there's nothing bigger than us. I definitely feel like there's something bigger than us. I feel like we are just an ecosystem of something. Like we could just be a cell in someone else's body, you know, because there are cells in our body that are doing jobs day to day to function us, you know, whatever that is. Me personally, like who am I to put a label on that? And that's why I'm like, I'll go to church as well. I've been to the Buddhist temple. I've been to Christian church. I've grew up Catholic in Catholic schools. And I think just after all of those experiences, I'm like, yes, I get that there's something bigger than us. I really like Buddhism because it was like the principle of like peace and like kindness. But again, yeah, I've always believed that I'm not the one that decides what that label is of the thing that's bigger than us, but I acknowledge its existence and I'm open to whatever comes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, pretty spiritual.
Yeah, spiritual for sure. I don't actively think about it, but when people ask me about religion, I'm like, yeah, I can see how that might be true. I can see how that might work. I most likely agree. I loved going to Christian churches for their sermons. I remember one of my favorite ones. They were talking about different people. When it was raining, they'd have water pots. And everybody would have a different sized water pot. And you know, that reminds me of this book I read, which is The Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Uh-huh.
And he says, you know, everybody measures by different measurements of success. And that's why when you asked that success question, I was like, that's really cool. Because, you know, my unit is going to be different to someone else. Someone else is going to want a Lambo.
Yeah.
Someone else is going to want to make two hits. Someone else is going to want a family. I just want to keep what I have. I'm pretty content.
Very Taurus.
Yeah, I'm grounded.
Grounded, yeah. Well, considering on paper, I feel like you're doing amazing stuff, but you've still got your head in a good place.
I think that it's taken a long time. And you know what? A lot of things my parents tell me, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And until 3 years later, I'm like, it was true.
Totally.
You know, my mom would say, you know, when you're 23, you're still figuring shit out. Like, but by the time you're 25 or 26, you're going to start stabilizing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to still be like me. But now that I'm here, I'm like, I see it.
I know.
They like predicted it because they were once my age and they've gone through it. They're just telling me what they went through. And because I'm also like genetically similar to them, I'm going to feel the same way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But it definitely takes time and a lot of patience and self-love to be okay with just going with the flow.
So when this comes out, I think, because you've got an album coming, right?
I do.
Should we talk about that like at the very end?
Yeah, for sure. So this album was really, I didn't plan for it to be an album, but then Square from Where Are the Asians
Square.
At?
Square, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Square.
Yeah.
Square was like, oh, there's project funding. There's a project funding round. The last one of the year. And that was last year, December. And he's like, they haven't announced any ones for 2023. So I don't know whether this is going to be the last round ever or whatever. And I didn't really know. I'm like, oh. And I think there was already some interest shown from NZ On Air. Like that Squared said like, oh, they're keen to support you. You just need to write a proposal. So we stayed up writing that proposal. And I was like, well, I have a backlog of really cool songs that I don't know will ever come out. Yeah, we wrote the 10-page proposal and just kind of got it a few weeks later, found out. And then I was like, okay, cool. Now I'm going to try and put it together and figure out what I want to do. But it's really just because I love music, like harmony, chords, R&B, jazz, and fusing that with beats. I feel like that was really what I wanted to do, is just have a collection of songs that I really enjoyed that probably wouldn't come out unless I put this album out.
Awesome. Congrats. Yeah.
Thanks. But I feel like my audience, I'm not trying to push it to like the general public, you know? I welcome everybody to listen to it, but I feel like what I'm trying to push it towards is more the musicians.
Yeah.
It's like music for the musos.
Is it finished?
Yeah, it's finished. And the last single is going to drop with the album on the 24th of November.
Cool.
Yeah, which is really cool because as this project has been kind of underway and with all the PR behind it, I've kind of been just flying around and doing other things, which is cool because like I'm working with all these people and then eventually they're going to hear it come out. And I feel like that's what it's for anyways, because my business comes from supporting artists and working with artists and songwriters and session musicians and other producers, engineers. So they're the ones that I want to impress. I want them to hear it like, damn, that's pretty cool. And that's all I want. And if not, like, I'm not stuck on it. Like, I just want everybody to enjoy it. On to the next year of releases, you know?
Yeah.
There's so much music that we're sitting on. And it's so exciting.
Yeah. How would you sum up 2023 for you?
I feel like I've learned more this year than any other year in my whole entire life. I feel like this year I grew, my eyes opened a bit more. That's not a racial thing. But I feel like my eyes widened in the sense that I know what the world can offer and I know what there is. I can smell the opportunity. I can smell a lot of things. So now I'm going to go hunt for it. You know?
Is there anything else we haven't spoken about that you want to talk about?
I guess with New Zealand music in general, the question I get hit with so often is like, how do you do this? And it's like, it didn't happen overnight, that's for sure. You know, it's like, it's consistency. It's making something even though you don't feel like making something, or, you know, pushing yourself as hard as you possibly can. Like, I hate posting on social media, but it just has to be done because people have to know you're alive.
Yeah.
Because if they don't know you're alive, then they're not going to look for your music.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I'm not an artist, because that's a hard grind of touring, of not having privacy, of always putting yourself on the line of you might get cancelled. You know, like, that's so scary. I don't want to get cancelled.
You seem pretty inoffensive.
Thanks.
Finish these sentences.
Okay.
I'm feeling inspired by
this conversation. I am feeling very, I like wholesome talks, and I feel like you asked some really, really good questions that are very open-ended, you know, and I feel like I want to get that list so I can use it on other people.
It's intentional. It's because I'm a trained coach. That's, wow. That's why we, that's crazy. Why I ask questions like that. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm really looking forward to.
Oh. Sorry. I was like, yeah, what are you looking forward to?
No, we're doing the finishing
sentence. Oh, right. I see. I'm really looking forward to next year. It's like I could feel it in my gut that something good's happening, you know? And I feel like everything that I've done leading up to now is going to happen next year. Or like soon-ish. But again, I have no expectations. I'm like, that's how I feel.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think that being in that vibe, good place to be.
Mm-hmm. And you know, how I feel could change tomorrow. And that's okay. And I'm like at peace with everything.
I'd love to be known for
my great, peaceful, positive energy. I put a lot of effort into what kind of energy I want people to feel from me. So that's what I want to be known for, being that guy that everybody's like, oh, he's chill as, but he's also like, yeah, because I'm unhinged for sure.
There has to be a degree of being unhinged hearing about how you have worked.
Yeah, I haven't diagnosed myself, but many people have asked me if I have ADHD, and I feel like it gets worse as time progresses because so many different things demand my attention. Yeah, and so I'm hyper-focused on several things, usually in a short span of time.
Would you get diagnosed?
No, because I don't think it's an illness. I think that it comes with being creative. Yeah, and I don't think that it's putting me at a disadvantage. So I'm not worried about it. Yeah. I'm happy with who I am. Yeah. I'm happy with whether I have it, whether I don't have it, I'm still happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Eddie, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. That was so fun.
Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible thanks to Foundation North, Creative New Zealand, and Big Fan. If you like that, please rate, review, and share the podcast. And don't forget to sign up to the newsletter. The link is in the show notes. See you next time.